I have a list here, and I'd like to see if you can guess what's on this list. I don't know how much Cincinnati is representative of the rest of the country. In some ways, I hope it's not representative of the rest of the country. But I do have something from the Cincinnati Inquirer, the local newspaper, that has the most popular children's books borrowed from the public library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County. And these are in alphabetical order. They're not in the order of what they've been borrowed or how often they've been borrowed. And I just wonder if you can, through your own experience, figure out what are the books that are on this list? What do you think are the most popular books that kids, at least in Cincinnati,
are any of these series? Or are
yeah, series.
Individual books.
These are any age. Actually, I see young books, old books, series, individual books. I will start by saying The Very Hungry Caterpillar is indeed on this list.
It is?
Yeah.
It's a very good book.
Yeah, it's one of the top 10. Any other suggestions? Some of the names have been around so far.
The Hardy Boys on there?
Hardy Boys are not on this list.
Nancy Drew.
Isn't that surprising?
Nancy
Drew?
Huh? Red Wall series?
No.
Is it Sweet Valley High?
Or Twins or Kids?
Box Children, she mentioned.
Babysitter's Club.
Yes. Arl Stein.
No, but that's actually a good point. We'll get back to Arl Stein in a minute.
Lauren Wilder.
Yes. Lauren Wilder. Yes. Little House on the Prairie books. I'm noticing that the kids are coming up with more suggestions here than the parents.
The Last Cry
Children?
No, but that's a good
question. How about Clary's
No, that actually surprised me.
What? Season 7?
The Clary. There are only Clary books in the
Peter Rabbit?
No.
Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss.
There we go, sure. Margaret Berger?
No.
Berenstain Bears?
No.
Roald Dahl? No, they're not.
What was that?
Roald Dahl?
What about Curious George books?
Oh, another good idea, but
not only.
You wonder if some of these books, too, might be more likely to be bought than borrowed from the library.
Yeah. So you have to take the Children?
St. Graham and Salt. No, the Boxcar Children are still not on
Where's
this list.
Where's Waldo's? Yeah.
Where's Waldo? Nope.
Oh, really? He's somewhere, but not on the list.
He's somewhere, but not on the list. Here's something you may have heard of.
Encyclopedia Brown, sure.
Yeah. Encyclopedia Brown.
Oh, I love Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah. Here's another one for the younger crowd. Kenneth's got this book, too.
Tim is
three.
Good night, Moon. Good night, Moon. Remember that one? This is the only one I hadn't heard of, and I had to look it up. It's a new one, How Things Work by David McCauley.
Those are great.
This is a fun book to just page through, and you see cross sections of things, and that's a real lot of fun. I'm sorry?
Corduroy.
Corduroy?
Yeah. For instance?
Yeah.
Just checked it out.
Yeah, there's one. Here's another one for the younger set.
Where the Wild Things Are,
oh
sure.
What?
Where the Wild Things Are.
Where the Wild Things Are.
Yeah, that book.
Cloudy and Chance of Meatballs?
Stephen Beastie?
No. Good guess.
Cloudy and Chance of Meatballs?
No. There's one series here that I'm surprised that nobody's mentioned.
How about Narnia?
No.
Strictly
Nana? I would think the girls would be more familiar with
Drew.
American Girl series.
This is good.
And the last one, which one is it?
I think you should check
that
out.
And I don't know if they mean all Judy Blume or if this is just one in particular, but Super Fudge and Fudge Mania.
Yeah.
All really, really good books. So if you want to measure yourself against what everybody else is reading. You can see, too, you've got stuff. I mean, Goodnight Moon and Very Hungry Caterpillar for this guy's going to enjoy. And you've got other stuff, too, Little House books and Babysitter's Club that some of the older people enjoy.
And what do they call it?
And I should say that this series, I got a copy of this series, or this list, before we went on our housekeeping trips, and as we went, I couldn't help but look on the bookshelves of the rooms as we were going through and seeing what was on the kids' bookshelves, and this pretty much bears it out. I would see stack after stack of the Babysitter's Club. It seems to be really popular with people these days. And I also saw the Lauren Zweiler's books. I didn't see a lot of the books that I had brought here. Mostly, it seems like kids are going for series these days. Now, here's another question, and I want to think about this. What kind of books are you reading or are your kids reading in school? And how is that different? Micah? You gonna say?
I should tell him. What kind of books are you reading in school? I don't know.
We buy the story.
Good night, Moon.
Yeah.
Okay.
We read books like books that have like 2-page stories.
2-page stories?
Like a thick book like that.
Short stories.
Yeah. And they have questions.
Those of you who are older kids, I want you to think back now to the years that you were in first grade, second grade, just starting to read, maybe a little bit earlier than that. Kindergarten? Four? Okay. What I want to read, this is a little bit more for the parents. This was something published in 1989, and I've since talked with my sister-in-law, who's a school teacher. Any other school teachers in here?
Used to be?
Okay. Maybe you can help me out if this is still the case, as to this is the type of book that kids are learning to read with. There's a problem with what they call trivialization of reading matter. According to English critic Richard Hoggart, reading, in which other settings promote intellectual growth, now threatens it. Let me share a few vivid examples of reading matter that has been trivialized. These samples are taken from a basic reader series, those books that come in packs, for instance, 6 levels before grade 1, and for each level, a textbook, a skill pack, a study book, and much more. These books cover the country like acid rain. The language is basal reader language, of course, which someone once called the only language in print that was never spoken by any human being. Note the first page of each 2 mini-stories in pre-primer number 4 of the Jin series, and this is a quote. "I will go out," the dog thought. "I will see what I can see. What will the dog see? What do you see here?" Now consider this page from a second mini-story in the same book, titled, "Where Are the Wheels?" "Where are the wheels?" "Here are the wheels. Wheels are on a van. Wheels are on a truck. Wheels are on the go." On that one page, 10 different words are recombined to make a total of 24 words for the child to read. 233 words of explanation are provided to show the teacher how to have the students read that page, repeat, drill, and repeat again. Can you think of any child aged 5 or 6 who would want to learn to read after this opening sample? How can we expect the child to relate to this stilted, unnatural, meaningless conglomeration of words? Suppose instead a child meets these lines from a trade book, and then something went bump. How that bump made us jump. Does this stir your curiosity and make you want to turn the page and read on? If so, you've plunged into The Cat in the Hat by Dr. Seuss, an early reading book that uses simple words of the basal readers to create something intriguing. Now consider this verse from a recent book by Carla Kushkin. "There was a hog who ate a dog, and then he ate a green grass frog. And then he was so full, he cried. And then he lay down, bang, and died." Notice that in this little sample, the words say something, in this case, something funny to the child. It is a mini story that builds its tiny plot from nothing to a ludicrous climax. "And then he laid down, dog, bang, and died." Furthermore, the language follows the familiar rhythm of everyday speech, not the awkward plot of where are wheels? Here are wheels. Okay, now, those of you who are parents, do you know what type of books your child has been learning to read with or will be learning to read with? Have you looked at the primers in school?
I sat this year and listened to pre-kindergarten and kindergarten children try to do words, and my experience in listening to them is that they were doing the first kind of books, but they were not books. They looked more like things that people made up. But these kids didn't, by and large, I mean, Grant, you're talking about 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, and they weren't reading for meaning. It was more like phonetic. Well, trying to, yeah. And for the ones that could read, then you could see them reading for meaning. But my experience was that they weren't. I mean, I'm kind of curious what would happen if they were engaged by the story, because like when she tries to read, if she wants to hear the story, it's kind of like she can't make the words go fast enough and you read it.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, like in the Draw Me a Star book, the Aaron Carroll book, she could read that book because there's enough repetition in it, but it wasn't like, see the dog run, run, dog, run.
You know this book? Draw Me a Star. This is by the same guy who did the very hungry caterpillar. I'll pass it around. You can take it with you. Ken will follow this around. Kathy, you were saying that recently in your school system they
We've changed reading series and we've totally done away with this. We just have stories. We don't even have questions at the end of the story to see if they understand it.
So. And then how are the kids responding? This is in younger grades, you said. It hasn't worked its way up to your grade yet?
Well, I'm fourth grade, so, yeah. I don't know, the pendulum swings, you know. For a while it's all phonics, no meaning, and then now it's meaning but no phonics. Somewhere we need a happy middle. Because children learn a variety of ways. Some will learn in phonics, some won't.
Well, my question then is all reading good reading? Is the act of reading in itself just something that we should encourage and not pay too much attention to what the subject matter is?
Well, at this age, I think that's great. I think when you're sounding out words on signs on the road, I think that's encouraging. But yeah, I would think at some point you kind of like direct somebody some direction to things that are meaningful.
Where is that point? I should ask some of the older kids. What books do you like and what books don't you like? Do you have a definite preference for particular things?
Earl Stein.
Okay.
You can tell what he likes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pop-up books.
And I like dinosaur books much, except because they're like really give a lot of information for them.
Before. Yeah, parents and grandparents, do you know Arl Stein? Do you know who he is? Have you read any of his books?
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, it's not great literature, but he's in second, he just finished second grade. And I figure anything that he wants to read is great at this point.
Okay.
And they're all kind of the same. All 145 of them.
Yeah.
Well, my kids are 4th grade.
34.
He's reading in 2nd grade.
Then
he's good. Yeah, my 4th grade.
Well, the analogy that Kathy gave me today, you want to give it again? Food is reading is like food, and this goes back to the whole thing yesterday where I said.
Said it better to you.
You said it better to me. Well, yeah. Yesterday, what I was saying is reading becomes the vegetables of education, where it's something that is hungrily accepted when they're a baby, and then as they get older, it gets harder and harder to get them to read until they turn off to it entirely. And you had another analogy with reading.
Well, I had it twice. Some reading can be like junk food, where you know it's really easy and it's a quick fix, and it's not necessarily very good.
It's not nutritious.
It's not finer kinds of foods, and they have to really be introduced to the better kinds of literature.
Yeah, Acquired taste. Yes. Some books are an acquired taste, and it really helps if you would encourage some of the, as the children get older, would encourage some of the, I want to say less pulpy books, but...
The Newbery Award.
Yeah, so the Newbery Award winners.
When I teach confirmation class in my congregation, I have the opportunity to assign reading assignments to some kids who simply cannot take sermon notes for some strange reason, which I don't understand either. But I always assign them books like Madeline L'Engle's Wrinkle in Time or something like on that magnitude, and it will be for most of them the first time that they encounter anything other than Sweet Valley High or something like that. And they invariably come back and say, are there more of these?
Yeah, once you've introduced...
And I say yes, and they'll come back the next year and say, I read all these books.
Okay, well, what I'll do the rest of the day and some of the rest of the week too is try to introduce some more quality books, and I'm sure that a lot of you will already be familiar with some of these books. Two resources that I want to give. We got this from AAL. Called Storytime with Your Children, and it talks about how to go through, just as the kids grow up, how to go through and read with your children. And then in the back it also gives some examples of some books that your children might find enjoyable, and also quality literature, not literature and not just reading.
And they also sent us a free book.
Yeah, they sent us a free book along with it. That Ken just loves. He can't get enough of it. And then I found this in the store, and this is wonderful. This is called Hey, Listen to This. Stories to Read Aloud, and it's divided into, it's edited by Jim Trelease, published by the Penguin Books Company, and it's divided into sections according to genre. Tell Me a Story is the first section, Tales from Long Ago is the second, School Days, Food for Thought, Fulton Fairy Tales, Animal Tales, Fantasy Lands, Children of Courage, Orphans of Storm, Classic Tales. And what it does for each tale, it gives you a teaser. The first chapter, for example, and it tells you a little bit about the author, a little bit about the background of the writing of the book, and then it leaves it up to you or your children to go and find the book by themselves and have to go rescue our son before he runs out the door. Go and find the book yourselves and continue reading, and they hope that the first chapter is enough to hook you, and in most cases it is. I'm looking through some of these, and I'm in some cases, like Mr. Popper's Penguins, I'm remembering a book that was on my own bookshelf. And in other cases, I'm reading the first chapter and I'm thinking, gee, this is a great book, and I have to go and find it myself. So this is a wonderful resource, too.
Can I tell you something about that?
Oh, go ahead.
Try and do. This is another one of his. I used to teach, and when I quit teaching, I still wanted to do something in field of education, so I sold World Book. You know, World Book Encyclopedia, and every time a family bought the set of World Book, I gave him a copy of his first book, which came out 10 years ago. I was real impressed with it. And it was in January, I think, of this year, the Dean of Women at the college gave me an article also by Jim Trelease, which was published in the Smithsonian Magazine, about what he's accomplished in the 10 years since he started. And this was the only one that was available at that time. And I got excited, but I thought, this is a guy I recommended 10 years ago. And he was a journalist, and the teacher asked him to come and talk to her class. And the little fourth graders, what do they care about what journalism, what I do, why I do, but he did. And as he left the classroom, he picked up one of the Bernstein Bears book. And he said, who's reading this? And three little girls held up their hand. And so he backed up and sat down and started talking about it, and they got so excited about it, every kid wanted to go to the library and check it out. He said, this is what should happen every single day with teachers' classes. Parents do this. He said, 50 minutes a day, sit down with your kids and read. That's all you need to do. Well, a lot of parents said, well, my kids talk to the class, and he said, when did you start reading to them? He said, well, when you got school age. He said, you start talking to the baby the minute he's born. He's hearing a voice, and he gets used to this, and you keep doing it. He said, and one example he gives in the book, I don't know if it's in this newest one, but he said, woman read when the baby was in the womb, and she read from Newsweek, and her parents, they all laughed at her and said, That's when you begin, the beginning of your sound, and the listening ability is 4 years ahead of the learning ability. So what you read to them is the vocabulary they have. They can't begin to read it, but they've heard those big words. And that's why your kids are intrigued with much, much better stories. Well then, after this article came out, I got so excited about it because in the last chapter of this article talks about a family who had a Down syndrome child, and I have one here, if you notice, in the village grandchild, and there's a Down syndrome child. And they teach sign language first. So she can do a lot with sign language, you know, at this point. She has no verbal. If she sees somebody's lying down on a bench or something, she'll say something like, sleep, I'm tired. You know, this comes to her in magazines at the same way. Well, anyway, the Dean of Women sent me the copy because she knew I had a Down syndrome child. Well, in this story, the family read 10 books a day to this Down child, and by the time she's school age, she's able to read. And when she's fourth grade, she's top of her class. Now, that was unbelievable that a handicapped child can also read, but it's the listening part first. And so I have gone around in our whole area to the schools, the college, please put these books in your library and the article with it. And we do it in our churches when you might want to do this, that every couple that has a baby, give them the article from the Smithsonian about the importance of reading, and the book is in your library, and they can borrow it or they can go buy it. And that's the newest one that's come out, because I tried to get more copies. I sent this one out here because I was excited about thought they should have it in the bookstore and push it. I said, I'll talk about it when I come. Because I just feel he's done such tremendous things with it.
Yeah, I didn't order any books for the bookstore. I would have ordered this, except I discovered it like the week before we came.
Right, and Janice said, well, they didn't put it in the bookstore because they weren't sure people would buy it. But it's here in the library. This is the copy if you want to look at it while you're here. That's where I've been donating it back home. And so I went to the Down Support. I mean, we have a whole section of a church that supports families with Down syndrome, and we got so excited about picking this up. Plus, your regular families. And I went to the slum areas of our cities, also where they have early pregnancies and so on, and with the article and a donation of the book. And said, please encourage your parents to read this. It gives them a good start in the importance of reading. That's one reason I'm here, is to push them.
Well, great, I'm glad you're
here. Jim Lee's is one of them, and I'm eager to see, you know, what in his new book, you know, how much more. But that's all he does now.
Really?
He goes around and talks about it. You know, the importance of reading, and it gets them off of TV. If kids get excited about reading, they'll go to bed with a book. You don't have to sit up and watch TV that's just junk constantly.
Yeah, as we said yesterday, it's hard to curl up with a good TV.
Right.
One of the interesting things that we've got involved in is the storytelling. And that's not reading books. They're wonderful stories that they read to them. That's really fun for older children like this.
Yeah, and the thing about reading books, too, that Kathy and I were discussing is being able to read these books when you read them aloud in voices and make them interesting. I mean, that really draws in the children much more than just the story itself.
And being held while you read is important to the little ones, of course.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
a sense of security as well as being read to them.
Our pediatrician, I don't know how regular this is, but our pediatrician asked us, starting with the 9-month visit, are you reading to your child? Along with things like, you know, is he walking yet, or is he crawling, or what's his weight, is your house proof, and then are you reading to your child?
And how much TV is he watching?
They don't ask that.
I thought it was a
really?
House too.
Wow.
We have a pediatrician on the board, you know, and I talked to him today too, but you know, you should have copies of this with your parents. As soon as they're born,
there you go. Well, we did read to Ken in his womb, but I don't know how this came out. Ken's first word was book.
Well, let me tell you an example that happened up here. One summer, there was a staff couple, born a girl. They met up here and they were married in 3 months. I thought, that's not even going to last. That's so fast. You know, but 2 years later, they came back and they sat at our table because they didn't remember very many people. And the little girl was not, she just turned two. And they were very verbal with her at the table, explaining what she ate, you know, what it was good for, what it was doing. And then they said, can we come up to her chalet and use the bathtub? Because she's afraid of the shower and we want her to have shampoo. So she came up and she was carrying some rocks, polished rocks, in a bag. And I said, Rachel, do you like rocks? And her mother said, she can tell you all about it when she's through with her shampoo and bath. So she came out and she put them on the table and she said, this one's opaque and this one's translucent. And I said, vocabulary, this child. I said, you read to her? And she said, yeah, the pre-verbal. And she said, I learned this from a man in our parish who said that he sang to his baby all the time, that he was carrying around and he sang a song. He didn't even know what the words meant, but it was something in a foreign language that his grandma sang. And years later, he heard this girl singing this in junior high, and he thought, I don't sing that. He said, you're doing that in school. She said, I've always known that song. He knew from babyhood this was in her. So this girl said, knowing what it did, she said, I have read scripture to the second baby of ours every time I nursed that child. I'm reading a lot of, so it's in them.
Yeah.
And not, it was this last year I came across my husband's, a lot of letters, and he wrote to his mother every week, and she wrote to him. My father-in-law was a bishop of the church, and he was gone a long time, a lot of the time, and mother was stuck. And she said, in the letter, she said, I don't know why I read the Psalms to you kids. I knew very well you didn't understand a word, but she said, they were so beautiful to me, and I thought, that's why my husband knew so many. So it's important to do this, that it's there a lot of stuff. You know, mm-hmm. Eat that lunch before you think of it.
And the other, as important as this is, I'd hate to say to parents who have older children that they couldn't catch up now. I mean, any time is a good time to start reading.
Right. And you continue reading as adults. You know, and I've had couples say, we share a lot of reading.
This one loves to be read too. Mm-hmm. We curl up on the bed. Read.
Okay. You were talking yesterday about reading to your children past when they read. And it's hard for we still do that, but it's hard for me to imagine doing that when he's in eighth grade or something. I don't know if people do that or.
Well, it's something that you can either do as a family where you pick a book that's and I'll suggest some. You can pick a book that would appeal to a wider range of people. Or you can and you know, it's not curling up like this, but it's just something that you could sit
right
in a circle and maybe pass around the book and everybody take a turn and read. Or even if you can't read together, you can at least read the book and then pass the book around so that you're all reading the book and having some discussion time. You know, I can imagine that when you reach a certain age, you know, you're not going to want to read aloud anymore, but the longer that it can go, I would imagine it's got to have some at least good effects.
I like what you said about your family, just like a reading time, isn't it? So you did not have to be reading the same book, but just everybody's reading.
Everybody's reading.
In the living room reading, whatever. Staring at the TV.
Yeah. We read Wind in the Willows a long time, you know, and Charlotte's Web.
And it really, I can tell you, it really sticks with you. As I'm going through these books and I'm reading through these books, I can pinpoint almost exactly where my family stopped reading to me, because I can hear, when I come across a book that was read to me, I can hear the voice of the person reading. When I come across a book that wasn't read to me, and so as the level increases, I can pinpoint almost exactly because I can hear the voices, Being the youngest, I had older brothers. Here's one. There's another one who's not here, who read to me, and I can still hear their voices as we go. When I read the Tolkien books, I can hear Luke's and Andy's voices in those books. So I know I've read at least at an older age. Let me go. I want to spend the remaining time just going through. I've got a stack of books that I pulled from the library, so that, I mean, even a library like Holden, which is small in comparison to maybe some town libraries, has some really good stuff. Shel Silverstein, I just brought this one down, but just about anything from Shel Silverstein.
Where the Sidewalk Ends.
Where the Sidewalk Ends is another one. The Giving Tree is another one. They used to have this in the bookstore. I don't think they do anymore. But the great stories with the bite and the ending. I like the endings. He's got some good points to make. We can pass these around. Father Gander Nursery Rhymes. If you're sick of the Mother Goose Nursery Rhymes, these are the non-racist, non-violent, non-sexist Mother Goose Nursery Rhymes rewritten. So this is something that for younger kids. You can go through these pretty quickly. Okay, these are books that I found that are just about, you know, everyday kids doing everyday things. Some of them may be in more unusual circumstances than others, but these are basically kids in their surroundings type of books. This is mine. This actually wasn't upstairs. Harriet the Spy, And The Long Secret are books about a kid growing up in New York and on the coast of New York. This one is more of a mystery book. Somebody's leaving notes all around town, and she's got to figure out who the heck this person is that's leaving all these mystery notes. And it's affecting everybody. And that's the type of book that goes there. Great Gilly Hopkins, this again is mine. This is a girl who's been to 3 or 4 foster homes, and she just can't get along with any of them because she's 12 years old, and she's independent, and she has a picture of her mother who's beautiful in the suitcase, and she feels she doesn't measure up. Encyclopedia Brown, we talked about. These again are mysteries. Each one has a little case. That the solution is in the back. If you read carefully, you can figure out exactly, along with Encyclopedia Brown, who's done what and what the crime is. You know, for kids in the sixth grade, the crime is usually, you know, stealing a nickel out of a flower can or other such things. Beverly Cleary books. This is Henry Huggins. You've read Henry Huggins? Yeah, he's great. He's got his dog Ribsy. And Beverly Cleary continued the series with the people in the town. Again, small town, I can't remember what the name of the town is. Again, kids just being kids. A different book by Beverly Cleary, I think did this win anybody?
Yeah.
Dear Mr. Henshaw did? I was under the impression that it had all, it's not on the cover, and usually they advertise it on the cover if they have. But Dear Mr. Henshaw is a different book by Beverly Cleary. It's about a kid who writes an author. Hoping for tips on how to become a famous author. This is a children's author, and the author essentially sends a reply that says, you know, go away, kid, stop bothering me. And he's so crushed by this that he stops writing for a while, but then he continues writing in his diary. He doesn't actually send the letters, but writes, Dear Mr. Henshaw. And then later on, the book develops a relationship with his author. The Great Brain books, anybody know these? This is more historical fiction. These take place in Utah about 100 years ago, but this is about a kid and his older brother, is this great brain who is a little bit obnoxious, but has all these schemes, and he outsmarts the people in town and figures out problems for people in town, and this is another great series that I just love reading. This is a book that I mentioned yesterday. I found this in the library, in the mix of the files of Mrs. Bass and Frank Father. There were 2 copies upstairs in the library if anybody's still interested in reading that. Henry Reed, anybody, you know Henry Reed?
Yes, hilarious.
These are funny. Henry Reed is a guy who, I think it's in the East Coast. New Jersey. Living in a small town, he runs a babysitting service, and this is how he learns to outsmart the kids and to keep the kids in control. And there are several in the series, not just about babysitting. One's about how he starts his own company, another's about how he travels across country. But they're very funny, and kids being, again, kids being kids and growing up. Penrod, Booth Tarkington. This is another older book, but again, a funny book about a kid and his escapades in hometown. The one that I remember is Little Gentleman with Itchy Itch. And I can't remember exactly what the story goes, but... But again, kids being kids. All of these are just good books. Roosevelt Grady, this was, again, another one from my own bookshelf, although I got this one from upstairs. This is about an African-American who's thrust from place to place and how he copes with just being transient, wanting to learn things and never being in school long enough to learn some things. So it's historical fiction in some respects. You want to learn about African Americans and sharecroppers and pickers. This is that type of book. And again, this is another older book. This is Roller Skates, won the Newbery Award, about a girl who's wants to be a lady, but she's really a tomboy. She wants to be a lady at heart, but exterior, she's a tomboy. And it's historical 1900s, early 1900s in New York City. And won the Newbery Award about 50 years ago. Those are the books that I put in the category of kids just being kids. Now these are books that are more historical. I guess I could have included some in this group. It's hard to separate them. Secret Garden, a movie just came out about this, but the book is better. Not your type of book. But it's about a girl who's transplanted from India to England and into this big house, and who she meets there, and really how she recovers from that. Julie of the Wolves, you know this one, right? Yeah, this is a great book. A woman, a young girl who's, you know, basically lost in Alaska. She finds herself in the wolves. Johnny Tremaine, I love the... this is a book that I got started on because I saw the movie. And I guess that happens in some cases. Movies aren't all that bad. You can see a movie and then go on to read the book. In many cases, the book is better. Little House in the Big Woods, we've mentioned. Lauren pulled out of the books. Oh, thank you. Peter Rabbit. Peter Rabbit. The Witch of Blackbird Pond. This is a... and the Bronze Bow. This is by, these are by the same author. She does historical fiction. This takes place in Massachusetts times of a young woman who is, doesn't understand the town's attitudes towards witchcraft and gets caught up in that. And the Bronze Bow, this is about, this is a story of Jesus from the standpoint of one of the zealots, one of the people who encounter Jesus and essentially give up their cause, which at the time was trying to get the Romans Palestine, which was Judea, yeah, Israel. And this is about a man who joins a troop of zealots and fights for the one cause, only to find that another cause has supplanted it. And it's, I think, a good historical fiction book. William Jean Dubois, he's got a great sense of humor. The 21 Balloons is about a man who travels around the world in less than 80 days. He sets sails across the Pacific with one balloon and is found in the Atlantic with 20 balloons. And they can't figure out how in the world he got from in the wrong ocean with too many balloons and what his story was. And it turns out that he was on an island just before it exploded, the biggest volcanic explosion that ever occurred. And he was on that island. And this is a story of what happened while he was on that. It's a great book. Peter Graves is another book by the same author. I don't have a copy of that. A young man meets an old inventor and what he does with the inventions. And then finally, I got these books out. I'm going to talk a little bit more about these on Friday. These are more beast fables. Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, another Newbery Award winner. The Secret of Nim was the movie that was based on this, but again, the book is much better. And The Cricket in Times Square, another New York book. You know this one? Yeah, very good. And then finally, these are more fantasy type books. These are books that you use your imagination, not really about our world, but about some elements and then some elements that make them fantastical. I found this book by John Christopher. John Christopher is an author who does children's science fiction. And this is the only book that I found, and I haven't read this one, so I can't tell you what this one is about. But I've read other John Christopher, and they're fantastic. They're great young science fiction books, mostly futuristic, what occurs in a future society. Mary Poppins, I don't need to say anything about that. Edward Eger, he wrote a series of 7 books about magic and what happens when children encounter magic of various kinds. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Roald Dahl, a young boy who is introduced into the magical world of chocolate making and this really weird inventor / chocolate manufacturer who takes him on an adventure. And then this book, which I just finished reading, The Giver, a winner of the Newbery Award winner last year. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic book. The ending is going to turn you. You're going to wonder.
It's good for families. If you would want to read that. I mean, the adults love it too.
And the ending is ambiguous. You don't know which way it goes. And you can discuss what goes on. But The Giver takes place in a utopian society in which everything isn't really what it seems to be. There's a lot of undercurrent of what's going on. It's a cross between, if you've read A Wrinkle in Time, there's a planet that they encounter in A Wrinkle in Time that's similar to this, or for adults, George Orwell's 1984 is very similar to this one as well. This is the Giver. There are books that I could have picked, but I didn't because I'm saving them for special sessions. On Friday, we're going to talk about beast fables and fantasies, myths, and some what it means to create a story that occurs in another world. On Saturday, I'm going to talk about books that, in some way, whether overtly or covertly, have a gospel message in them, and really the story of Jesus. And this is one that I'll bring back on Saturday, but I'll bring others back as well. Okay, and that's all I have for today. If you want to look at these, you feel free. If not, thank you for coming.
I have a question for you. Where I do teach, and what they have started at our school is studying the authors and then introducing different books kind of in literature circles and then discussing those and passing those around from group to group. And it has certainly whetted the appetite of the children. Mm-hmm. And what I notice is that it allows them to make some really good decisions on the type of books they're like, why they like them, why they don't care for them, mm-hmm. where they'll like one book really well from the author and not care for another one. So it gives them a comparison, which I think is really good. Just by studying authors rather than individual books.
Yeah, and this is a case too where I found maybe an individual book by an author, but any book would by that author would be good. Beverly Cleary is one that I just saw her.
But it just gives that comparative element that you don't always get with other books.
Mm-hmm. So, if you have a sense of, I'm looking at the list on the board here. I'm wondering if girls end up reading more than boys. Do you know?
I don't really know. I don't have a sense. I do know that there isn't an American Boys series, is there?
Goosebumps, I think. Most of my books.
Boys go more for Goosebumps.
I didn't have too many girls.
Yeah, I don't really have a sense of how genders go. I don't know. Where we can have a whole other session of whether or not this is culturally derived or inherently derived.
I think when I was young, girls read more. I don't know about anymore. The boys were off doing their sports and they wear dresses.
I'm the wrong person to ask because in our family, which was three boys, I mean, we all read.
Yeah.
Profusely.
Yes.
Guess
voraciously.
Why? We read to you when you were little.
Uh-huh. Wow, great.
That's by the way, Greg, I regularly read stories to adults all the time. And
in the congregation?
In the congregation. A lot of stuff by Walt Reiser and stuff like that. And they eat it up and then go get the books. I mean, it doesn't stop when you grow up.